Oh man, man, it's a cacophony of sound when everyone thinks we're doing different things and trying to have different things happen. We want people around here, no matter what you believe, to at least know where we're going as a community, as a team, what God wants this team to do. You know, God has always been pulling together teams from the beginning of time that had different unique focuses. One of the earliest teams, the most significant teams in the Bible is the nation of Israel. In the book of Genesis chapter 12 verses 2 and following, God gives them the mission statement of what that community, what that team is supposed to be about. It says this. It says, I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. And whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on the earth will be blessed through you. God says, when you come together in my name and you're about my stuff, people are blessed. People are thankful that you're around. You're a blessing. And your society is better because you're there. People are better off because you are there. And unfortunately, this is not the reputation the churches have, the churchgoers have. It just isn't. At most, 20% of America is in church this weekend. At absolute most, 20%. And there's a book that came out that surveyed all those people that don't go to church. The book is called Unchristian. And it's just trying to figure out what are the perceptions of people who aren't a part of church about people who do go to church, and specifically those who align themselves with Christianity. Here's one of the quotes that were in it, in the book. It said this. In our national surveys with young people, we found that the three most common perceptions of present-day Christianity are anti-homosexual, an image held by 91% of young outsiders, judgmental, 87%, and hypocritical, 85%. These big three are followed by the following negative perceptions embraced by a majority of young adults. Old-fashioned, too involved in politics, out of touch with reality, insensitive to others, boring, not accepting of other faiths, and confusing. So they just asked them, what's your perception of Christianity? And this is it. Anti-homosexual, judgmental, hypocritical, old-fashioned. I'm going, is this what Jesus was about? Is there anything in here that's reflecting being a blessing? That's not the way those of us who go to church are perceived. You know, why are we not perceived as, oh, those are the people who just are radical grace givers. They just give grace. Why is that not on the list? Why are we not perceived as those who just really downtrodden and angry about poverty? Well, why is that not on there? Why is it that we're not the people who have families that are healthy? Why are we not perceived as that way? Why aren't we not perceived as people who just give love? Why is that not there? And you could even say that there's some media bias that has infiltrated this in some people's minds. Maybe, maybe not. We can debate that some other day. But the fact of the matter is, when the top qualities that represent people's perceptions of people like you and I are that, something is really wrong, really, really wrong. You know, when I'm on a plane or someplace where no one knows me and I'm sitting beside someone who doesn't know me, I always have to figure out whether or not I want to have a conversation with them or not, right? How many of you like to have conversations with people you've never met before and will never meet again? Just out of curiosity, how many of you do? Wow, 10, 15 people. Man, how many of you do not want to have conversations with people you've never met and won't meet again? That's interesting. That's interesting. I'm never sure if I want to or if I don't want to. And so based on what kind of mood I'm in, it'll dictate whether or not I ask the person a question. If I ask the person a question, what do you do for a living? Then I know I'm going to have a lot of conversation. And I hate, or I'm uncomfortable when someone asks me what I do for a living, because it's a defining moment whether or not I'm going to talk or not talk. So if I don't want to talk and someone says, what do you do for a living? I say, well, I'm a Bible believing pastor who believes in literal hell, and people still go there. Conversation just ends right there. It's like I have a nice silent flight the rest of the time. In fact, I don't even have to do the hell part. All I have to do is say, I'm a pastor. Okay, you know, they don't want to be around me at all. It's just, it cuts off conversation. Last night I was at a party and sitting beside somebody who I'd never met before. And I said, well, tell me, what do you do for a living? And so I had this thing and I thought, well, I'm at a party. Why not? I'll be nice. So I said, I'm a part of City Transformation. That's what I'm on. I'm also a spiritual coach. And, oh, really? All of a sudden they want to talk about that. Try to figure out 20 questions what that is. People want to be about that because they perceive that as interesting, as engaging, as being interested in people. Pastor, someone who's associated with church, that's like weird, scuzzy, wears polyester and cheats on income taxes. It's just, you know, it's just not something that's really valued. Hey, we need to be a place where people just say, man, those Crossroads people, those people who align themselves with Jesus, even though many of them aren't sure they believe in Jesus, those people come together, try to figure him out. We need to be about that. We need to think highly of those people. If you just did a precursory reading of Jesus' life, you would find out he has very little in common with average churchgoers. Very little. An average precursory reading of Jesus' life shows that he's about getting outside of his comfort zone, about getting away from people who have all the same thoughts as he does, and being around people who are ruffians, being around people who have doubts about God, being around people who are doing some really, really wild, crazy, crazy things. And we see this very clearly when you look at the authorized biographies of the life of Jesus. They're the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And I'm going to take a look at one of them today, the book of Luke, which was written by a physician who pulled a bunch of eyewitness accounts and lived there in the first century and tried to figure out exactly what took place, what people saw, how they experienced when Jesus touched them. And when you take a look at the Gospel of Luke, you see a guy that runs to people. Not a guy who puts up barriers, not a guy who judges people, but a guy who runs to people. So let's just start on our little journey. Luke chapter 5. Here's what happens. Jesus is hanging out with friends that other people don't like. And some of them were tax collectors. To be a tax collector in first century Rome, or in first century territory that was occupied by Rome when you were a Jew, was to be a friend with the worst of the worst. So the Romans had to fund their empire, and so what they would do is they would get people who understood the business structure to be able to extrapolate as much cash as possible. And they would get Jews who knew the Jewish business infrastructure to be able to know, hey, we're going to have to get that money over there and that money there. That. And actually what Rome would do with many of these tax collectors is they would say, we want, as a nation, Rome, we want this much. And so whatever you raise above and beyond that, that's yours to keep. So these Jews were hated by other Jews because they were seen as traitors. And nonetheless, Jesus is spending time with them. He's hanging out with them. He's laughing with them. He has a genuine friendship with them. And one day, he comes to a guy who's doing his thing. He's at his tax collector booth, and his name is Levi. His last name is Garrett. He was later on going to invent tobacco. He sees Levi, and he says, hey, why don't you come and follow me? Time for you to leave this life, and let's go about running after people. And here's what it says. Then Levi held a great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with them. Who do tax collectors hang out with? Other tax collectors. who do moralists hang out with? Other moralists. Who do churchy religious types people hang out with? Other churchy religious type people. Who do anti-homosexuals hang out with? Other anti-homosexuals. Who's homosexuals hang out with? Other homosexuals. We all hang around people who are like us. And Jesus was actually hanging around people who weren't like him in many ways, had a genuine friendship with them. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, who belonged to their sect, complained to his disciples, complained to Jesus' close friends, why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? See, to eat and drink with somebody in that society was to pay them the highest compliment. It was to say, I want a relationship with you. And so they're going, why is he eating and drink? And Jesus is like, hey man, this is where the fun parties are. Fun parties aren't with the moral majority. This is where the fun parties. I'm kind of hanging around, you know, where these people. He was constantly accused. Why are you eating and drinking, having genuine friendships and even fun with people who are outside the religious fray? Jesus answered them, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I've not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. What is a sinner? A sinner is somebody who's missing the mark. That's what that word means. I'm about people who are missing the mark and they want to come back to straight bullseye where God wants their life to trend. I was watching recently Ken Burns' World War II saga. Anybody been watching that on PBS? Pretty interesting. The most recent episode I saw is when a guy was talking about when you get hit on the battlefield. He said when people get hit and they get shot in the battlefield, they don't cry out for their sweetie. They don't cry out for their mother. They scream out, medic! Medic, when they're hit, it's the first thing and the only thing to see, medic, medic, medic. When you're hurt, when you have needs, you want somebody who you know can help you. Medic. And Jesus is saying, people who tend to go to church or tend to be religious like you people are criticizing me, you don't think you have any needs. You think everything is right. You think your views are right. You think your actions are right. You don't have any perceived needs. I'm about people who realize they have needs. who realize they've been hit. Sometimes it's because you're in poverty. Sometimes because your family's broken. Sometimes because you have an addiction you can't get over. Sometimes because you have absolutely everything. You have scads and scads of money. Everything is going right in your life. Yet at the same time, you realize something's not right in my life. And you're just going, medic. Jesus says, I'm about people who realize they have needs. Not about people who want to band together with other people who are exactly like them, hurling hand grenades at other people who are wrong and who are different than them. He continually came up against this over and over and over and over and over and over again. Criticism after criticism after criticism. Is there anybody in your life that you spend time with who is not like you? Is there been anybody in your life that votes differently than you? These are the kind of places where Jesus is. If you're only around people who are just like you, you're not around Jesus. You're not. Where's Jesus? Jesus is around people who are not like you, who have some issues. And if you want to be around God, if you want to be around His power, what you do is you run to there. Not convince yourself that everything I have is right, but you run to there. I have a little list up on my mirror. I've had it for a long, long, long time, and the names keep changing out. It's called what I call my pace list. Right now it's in lipstick up in the corner of the mirror. And it's names of friends, genuine friends that I have, that I'm building a relationship with, who I just like. But I sense they got some needs in their life, and I sense that they really need God in a huge way in their life. And when I brush my teeth, put my toothpaste in my brush, and I kind of do it. That's why it's called my pace list. I just pray for them. I help them. I'm just kind of doing it. It's on my pace list. Now, these people, they're not object of a strategy. It's not like these are people I genuinely care for. They're genuine friends. And I care about those folks. My heart breaks for them, and I genuinely like to be around them, even though they have things going on in their life that I wouldn't personally do. Is there anybody in your life that you run to, that you go around, that's the kind of person that Jesus would be around and he would get criticized for? I'm not talking about proselytizing. I hate proselytizing. I'm not talking about someone coming up and giving you some canned spiritual formula and say, if you do this and pray this and, you know, pie in the sky when you die, everything's good. I hate when people do that to me. I do. When someone comes up and starts giving me some spiritual spiel who I don't even have a relationship with, I'm offended. It bothers me. You don't want to do that with me. You know, because I'll jack you up. I really will. I will mess up your faith because I know more than you. If you come at me and you start giving me something, I'll ask you questions and tell you things. You'll leave hating Jesus because I'll give you stuff that's... I will. There's problems and conundrums you've never thought of, and I have. And I'll jack you up if you do that. Because it's not as simple as you think of just this and that. I want people who will engage. That's what the world wants, is to engage. That's what Jesus did. He engaged. He jumped into people's life. Did life with them. And yet he continually, over and over, got criticism. So next scenario, in Matthew, or in the book of Luke, chapter 7, I'll just read it up here. It says this. Jesus says, you know, for John the Baptist came neither eating bread nor drinking wine, and you say he has a demon. The Son of Man came, that's himself. Son of Man comes eating and drinking, and you say he is a drunkard. He's a glutton, a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. But wisdom is proved right by all her children. See, John the Baptist was a guy who was actually a cousin of Jesus', and he had a heart for God, and he was about people, and he was true to himself. He was very true to himself. And in being true to himself, he wouldn't go to parties. He wouldn't have alcoholic drink. He actually would wear weird camel clothes. But he was true to himself. He was about the mission God would have him be. And Jesus comes along, and he's not doing those things because that's not who he is, and he gets criticized. And they could constantly call him a friend of tax collectors and sinners, a friend, a partier. And Jesus is like, and your point is, yes, yes, you're going to criticize me for this? Yes. And he says, wisdom is proved right by her actions. He says, look at the fruit in my life. Look at the people who are being touched and changed. You know, there are always going to be around us criticisms that are thrown our way, misunderstandings that are thrown our way, and our harshest and deepest criticisms has often been from people who are in the religious community who don't understand. And we say, hey, you know, I love what you're doing. God's doing something in you, I guess. But this is where we are. We run with people who are broken. We run with people who haven't gotten all figured out. That's what we're about. We run after that. One of the people on my
List is a guy I've had a relationship with for years. And I've regularly asked them, hey, why don't you come to Crossroads? Why don't you come to Crossroads? And when I ask a friend of mine to do that, it's not because I want Crossroads to get bigger and have another number. It's because as much as I think that I know and as good of a communicator as I am, I've just found that just my voice doesn't help my friends understand it. It just doesn't. I need a place where I can bring my friend and they can say, oh, they can be affected by arts. They can have their kids hear something. They can come in and hear some other voice say something that I might have said or even never thought to say. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, what she said. Yeah, exactly, you know, what she said. There's something about being in the environment of team that's helpful to me. So this friend of mine, he's been saying like forever he's going to come. He said, what time are your services again? And I kind of give him all the service times and say, okay, I'll be this weekend. Never see him, years and years. Not too long ago, we spent some time together at the ATP, and we started talking. He just started talking about some sex stuff going on in his life, and we started getting, you know, deep on that stuff. And coming up was a sex series, so I just kept that in the back of my mind. And Saturday of the first weekend of the sex series, he crossed my mind. So I picked up the phone, called him, left a message with him, and said, hey, you said for years you're going to come. Just come this time. I'm never going to ask you again. If you just come, bring your family. It'll be fine. You can leave if you want to. I just trust me on this. Just I gave him the service times again, and I didn't think anything of it. Then after the end of that first one, and we talked about in the sex series that we're not doing anybody any favors to just talk around the issue. The thing about Jesus, when he spoke, he used the common language. He knew Hebrew because the scriptures were written in Hebrew. He knew Hebrew. He could speak Hebrew, but he spoke in Aramaic. Aramaic was the common street language of the day. He spoke Aramaic. And actually the Bible, the New Testament, is written in Greek. It's written in Koine Greek, not the classical highbrow, but the guttural slang street language Greek. The Bible, God's words, always comes to us in the normal vernacular, in the normal sayings of the culture. And when we try to have this higher and loftier, like flowery language, it doesn't help anybody at all. So we came in and just said, we're going to talk with people like we're talking with our friends having a beer. That's how direct we're going to talk. And so I did some things about like duct tape. I don't want to give that whole illustration right now. I did some thing with duct tape. And I got off the stage and just had forgotten even that I'd asked them. And he has a very distant Catholic background. His wife has zero religious background at all. As a little kid or anything. It's just zero. And I came down here and all of a sudden, there they were. I'd forgotten about them. They were, and it was like God had just taken a knife and just flayed them open, just whoosh, cut them both open from head to toe and just pulled them open. And you could just see that they were exposed and vulnerable, and you could see their heart beating. They were just, you know, too deeply touched, a lot of emotions happening there. And I'm thinking, oh man, maybe this was not a good one for me to bring them to. maybe I just created a marriage problem because this isn't good. And, called him back up the next day and said, hey, hope everything's okay. Hope I didn't mess it up with you and your, you know, wife and everything. And he said, no, man, it's all good. And he talked about some of the changes. They've never missed a weekend since. Never missed a weekend. Their kids are being grown and challenged. They never miss a weekend. And here's what I'm excited about. I'm not excited that Crossroads has grown by 4 people over the last 7 weeks or whatever, 8 weeks. I'm excited that a friend of mine who's been missing the mark has been run after. Being run after, and Jesus is there anybody in your life like that? Or you, if you tend to be distant, or do you sense Jesus pursuing you? He's pursuing you. He's coming after you. He's not happy until you come in to a relationship with you. He's dead passionate about that. Luke 15, Jesus gets his criticism again. Again, here's what it says. It says, now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, the religious, the churchgoers, they muttered, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. They mutter. So I love the word muttering. Let's all say mutter 5 times. Go ahead, say it. Mutter. That just sounds awful, like mutter. So all these religious people are like, oh my, yeah, he's friends with people who aren't like us. He's like hang out with people who actually have Bud Light. He's actually like, he has 50 Cent in his iPod. Oh, I can't believe, oh, he's just like, oh, mutter, how can you tell? He's like, is there a problem here? How many times have we gone over this?
people, how many times have we gone, how consistently have you seen my life be about this? And so he pulls out the big guns. He says the same thing three different ways, three times in a row. Those of you who are in marketing or in advertising, you would call this the rule of three. If you watch advertising or watch commercials, you see the rule of three at play. They'll like give three problem scenarios, and then they'll give the solution, you know? Tired of stinky hair, tired of your hair sticking together, tired of people vomiting when they look at your hair. Well, now try new, improve, whatever it is. There's like three problems, and then boom. So Jesus goes into three different ways he's going to describe the problem, describe what he's about. He said, here's what it's like. I don't like this muttering. I catch where you're going. Here's what it's like. It's like a woman who's got 10 coins. She's got 10 coins, and she loses a coin. What does that woman do? She says, I need to find that coin. She doesn't say, well, hey, you know, I got 90%. That's good enough. She says, no, I need that one coin. She leaves the 90% behind and she runs in pursuit of that. She looks in cushions. She looks under couches. She looks all over the place. A number of years ago, it's actually the last time I talked about this passage at Crossroads on a weekend service. It was actually at where we were renting property over in Hyde Park on Erie Avenue. And I lost my keys. I lost my keys. And to this day, I have not found those keys. And to this day, it bothers me. Honestly, it does. When you lose something, you don't want other keys. You don't want similar keys. You don't want duplicate keys. You want your keys. You want your keys. To this day, if I'm driving down Erie Avenue and I see Clark Montessori, I want to pull in and say, hey, lost and found lady, has anybody turned in a set of keys? Because there's something that's wrong. When you're missing something that's yours, it just grieves you. Jesus said, that's what God's like. When someone's missing, it grieves him. And he just runs after he's in search mode. He looks at people and are like going, you still don't get it, do you? Here, let me put it another way. Okay, there's a guy who's a shepherd. He's got 100 sheep. 99 of them are doing fine, but he realizes when he does his head count at the end of the day that one of them is missing. One of them is missing. What does he do? He goes after the one that's missing. He leaves those 99. He doesn't just stay and like talk with them about how they're all found and everything is nice with them. He goes after the one that's lost. Not lost as in stupid. Lost as in disconnected. Lost as in just separate from this life-giving community. And when the shepherd goes after and finds it, Jesus says, there's more celebration in heaven, more partying in heaven over that one person who's disconnected, who's found, than the fact that all 99 people kept the rules. So that's what God's like. God runs after and seeks it. He says, 10% isn't enough, 1% enough. Anybody looks at people going, you still don't get it. You don't get it. He says, so he thinks to himself, it's like his wheels are going, inanimate object coin, you're still not getting it. Animate object sheep, you're still not getting it. Okay, let's go from all that stuff and go from 9 to 99 down to 3. He says, okay, here's a story. It's come to be known as a prodigal son, though Jesus never called it the prodigal son. Story is known by some as the prodigal son. Some know it as the loving father. Some know it as the religious tight anal brother. There's three different people in this story. Here's how this story goes. These are in rapid fire succession. Jesus continued. Again, this is the only time he ever gave the same point three times in a row. He never did it with poverty. He never did it with the Ten Commandments. This is the only time he ever said the same thing three times in a row in succession. There was a man who had two sons. And the younger one said to his father, Father, give me a share of the estate. So he divided his property between them. It's the son who goes to his dad and says, Dad, I really don't want to be around you anymore. So if I could just have an early inheritance and be done with you, that would be just fine with me. In Middle Eastern thought, what he was saying was, Dad, I'd rather have money than you. I wish you were dead. Give me money more than you. I wish you were dead. This is, in essence, what most of America does. God, I'd rather have money than you. I'd rather have anything than you. I'll do a little playing at church, but I'd rather have anything. The things that I'm most passionate about, the things that I'm most grieved about, or the things that I don't have, and I want to have those things, I'd rather have them more than you. And God really is about our freedom. He'll give us freedom. He doesn't put his thumb and squash us and make us be pinned down in one location. He'll give us our freedom. And so this guy's warped understanding of freedom was just being away from God. And so the man who represents God, the father who represents God, says, all right, son,
Here's all the money. I'll give you freedom. Go away. Even though it's not real freedom, it's a twisted kind of freedom. So he goes away and he leaves his brother who stays there, and he leaves his dad, and he spends everything on wine, women, and song. Everything. Blows it all. And in fact, the market has a downturn. So his securities and the stuff that he's been given, his holdings, they all turn to nothing. He has absolutely nothing, and he's forced to go into menial labor. And he's actually feeding pigs. And feeding pigs, this is a crazy, crazy thing to do. He's a Jew. Pigs are not kosher. For a Jew to be around pigs and be feeding pigs is like for a fundamentalist to be around a pornography set. That's just not something you do. And he's around this. Jesus is painting it to be so clear that this guy, to the naked eye, has no redeemable characteristics. He's doing everything wrong. He's told his dad he wished he would die. And now he's doing the worst, grossest thing to his Jewish religion and helping unkosher things grow and flourish. And this guy, as he's doing this, he notices that he's so hungry that the pods that he's feeding these pigs, he would be better off if he went back to his dad, and he'd be better off if he was just actually eating the pods himself. So here's how the story goes. He says, I'm going to go back and I'm going to say, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. So he got up and he went to his father. He says, I'm just going to go back. I'm just going back and I'm just going to lower myself and I'm going to say, hey, dad, I'll be menial labor. I just want to eat. So you can imagine how broken, how humiliated someone like that would be who's going to have to go back and eat crow. Go back to where the father who only knew love and go back to the brother that did everything right. So he starts turning around. He starts changing. That's what it means to repent. It means to start changing. And he starts walking back. And over here we have the dad. Over here we have the dad. And who knows what he's been doing? Who knows if every day out of the corner of his eye, he's been looking off in the horizon, the general direction that his son went. Who knows that his dad every week might have been doing search and rescue missions, just going around because he doesn't really know where his son went. Who knows if he's doing that? Who knows if at this moment he's looking in the exact same direction, wondering if his son's going to come home. All we know is, as Jesus tells the story, is this what happens. Then his dad... But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and he was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. His dad sees this beaten, broken, humiliated person who told him, I wish, dad, you were dead. God, I wish you were dead. You are dead. His dad sees him and he's the loving father. He actually takes his tunic. He would have pulled it up and tucked it inside of his belt. And he just runs. It's just like asses and elbows, getting over to see his son. Elbows, at least. He just run just to get to his son. He gets to his son. People are going, you're running. Fathers in this thing do not run. Dignified fathers of Jewish families don't run. They don't tuck. They don't run. This is the only time in the Bible where God is depicted as running. He's not running to kill people. He's not running to give people moral commands. It's the only time he runs. He runs when somebody loves is disconnected and starts the journey. He runs. He runs over and he pulls off his ring. It's the signet ring that signifies all his wealth. He sticks it on his son. He says, all I have is still yours. He sticks it back on his son. He says, hey, fatted calf. That fatted calf has been fattening up for a great party. Now is the time. Kill the fatted calf. My son was lost. My son was disconnected from me. And now he's back. Now he's back into the fray. And you would think that, whoo, at this point, happy story. Everything ends. What a wonderful thing it is. No, because we still have the religious anal brother to deal with. The one that's kept all the rules, the one that's gone to church, the one that did all the right things, the one that was around God, at least publicly. Maybe the one who is physically present. This person is physically present, but they're very spiritually distant from the heart of God. Let me tell you, there's a lot of us who are physically present, but spiritually very distant from the heart of God. You can be physically anywhere you want. It doesn't mean you're anywhere close to the heart and tenor of God. And that's the way it is with this guy. He's so high on himself that he's kept all the rules. He's done all the things that are right. He gets his dad alone. And here's what he says to his dad. Look, all these years I've been slaving for you. No, not worshiping and enjoying you. Slaving. That's what happens when you just do religion by keeping rules and going to places. It's not freedom, it's slavery. Attitude's in the wrong place. I've been slaving for you. I never disobeyed yours. I always kept the Ten Commandments. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate and have a field party with a keg out in the field. But when this young son of yours
has squandered your property with prostitutes, when he comes home, you kill the fatted calf for him. What is that all about, Dad? Tell me how that makes sense. He left, he did everything wrong, and you're running to him, and you're giving him everything. How about moi? How about me? His dad's like, oh, son, you don't understand. And he continues, here's what his dad says. He says, son, you know, you're always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours, he was dead, spiritually dead. And he's alive again. He was lost. He's found. He was disconnected. He's back in the fold. A number of years ago, Libby and I were and the family were down on our summer study break, and we went to a nice little restaurant. We were at this restaurant. It was an outdoor restaurant, and they had a dock over yonder, and there was some big fish, I guess, that were in the water, and some people were feeding fish. And so we were back, I don't know, 30, 20 yards or so, having a meal, and the kids had gotten up, and they were all over there feeding fish and throwing stuff off. And our youngest, Mariah, had just learned to swim that weekend, or that week. So she was real tentative with it, but she just learned to swim. And out of the corner of our eye, and having heard a bunch of commotion, we realized that Mariah fell in. And when we looked over, there were three, and now there's two. She's gone. She's gone. Immediately, we both get up and just tear off. I come out down the end of this deck, and I don't even know what's there. I don't remember how low the water is. I don't remember how down. I don't know what. I just come off the deck and just whoosh. And Libby too, we just kind of hike it and just go right off, get in the water, just sort of barely doing the treading water doggy paddle thing. We scoop her up, we bring her up, we prop her up. And while this was happening, by the way, one of our kids was sitting on the corner of the dock going, swim, Mariah, swim, swim, swim. Thought that all she needed was some encouraging. All she needed was some teaching. All she needed was a swim, swim. This is what older religious brothers do. They never jump in. They never engage. They never actually help anybody in poverty. They never actually tutor. They never actually develop people, relate to people who have addictions. They never hang out with people who have scads and scads of money but have pieces of brokenness in their lives and have genuine relationships. They just stay in their own place and say, hey, just do this. Do this. Don't do that. All that. They never get engaged. They stay here and they become bitter religious people and actually get away from God. Hey, you know, you want to be around Jesus? You want to be around? Get around people who need Jesus. That's where Jesus is. That's where Jesus, he's not around people who all have the same thoughts. He's around people who are disconnected. He said, that's what I do. That's what I run. Here at Crossroads, we run. That's what we run. We see a poverty situation, we run. We see marriages that are broken, we run. We see people that have no training, no religious background, and we run. We run into them. We run into them and we create an environment for them. We create darkness. We create music that's helpful for them. So, no, I don't like that music. Why don't we do some of that nice churchy music? You know why? Because my friends hate that music. That's why. And I do too. I do too. So we create environments here where we connect with God in the language in which we understand. That's a form of running to our normal friends. And we take our cues from God. God runs. He runs. This is the only time in the Bible where God runs. Jesus runs to people who are disconnected. At Crossroads, we run.
The world is going soft, and we are not going with it. We're going the way of God, no matter which way the rest of the world is going. We're not the church of tomorrow. We're the church of today. We're growing. We are moving forward. We're not going back to ritual or tradition. We are about the Bible. Isn't negotiable or for the faint of heart. It's a revolutionary message that changes lives. We're going to receive truth, speak truth, act on truth. Whether it's in line with popular opinion or not, we are equal opportunity offenders. We aren't satisfied with mediocrity. God has given us his best, and we give him ours.
we are doing life together. We are real, no matter how messy it gets. Some people hide their dirty laundry. We air ours, because being real brings freedom. We're not just bothered by poverty, injustice, and oppression. We hate them. We are not satisfied with the way things are, so we're changing them. We are bucking the system that's built to smash people like bugs on a windshield. Our system is love. We are into coffee. 350 gallons a week. And it isn't for sale. Nothing is. We give freely, and we receive freely. We are for freedom, and we're against religion. We are going to change the world. We're not about fat savings accounts. We put our money where our mouth is. We spend every dime on blessing communities, building into families, and breaking the bondage of poverty. We're not taking ourselves too seriously. We still laugh at the same jokes we thought were funny in junior high. We are moviegoers, sports fans, and music lovers. We think God is too. We don't check our culture at the door. We are doing everything short of sin to communicate, provoke, and connect you to the message of Jesus. We are convinced that the Jesus you follow can tell the world exactly where you stand. And we don't walk toward the dying. We run.
Runners, take your mark.